This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Market Talk for the month of March. In a generally quieter week for financial markets, ahead of the upcoming Easter break, we'll be looking back at the dovish actions of US and UK central banks. We'll be analysing currency moves in both the Japanese yen and the Chinese yuan. And we'll be talking more generally about what's on the financial horizon. So hosting the call from the UK is me, Frances Watson, and walking us through the financial milestones, as usual, is Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, you're recently back from the Cheltenham Festival, and you've been backing on the GGs. Do you want to talk about that, or should we just move on?
Well, I'm here working, so obviously it wasn't that successful, was it? So, yeah, we'll probably move on.
So, look, last week there was quite a lot of action, wasn't there? And it has been a busy couple of weeks with, you know, both the announcements from US Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and a decidedly more dovish tone. Can you just walk us through that, Ben?
Super interesting, really. We had, so remember, January, February, we had inflation data, particularly in the US, that was higher than expected. Inflation is, I'd say, impossible to forecast. So whatever people tell you about what it's going to be, what it has been, take it with a pinch of salt. But Jerome Powell came out at the Fed meeting last week, and we were all sort of nervous about what he was going to say in terms of perhaps the higher inflation would be putting him off cutting rates in the future. But no, he said the plan is still to cut rates three times this year. That's what the average Fed member is forecasting. That's what they forecast at the end of last year, and that's what they still forecast. So the plan is the same. He even said that there is a chance that the January-February inflation data was pushed higher because of this menu effect that I think we've described this before. You know, it's that businesses potentially just change their prices once a year, and it might be at the beginning of the year, and that's just distorting some of the inflation. So he was like, no, don't worry about that. The plan is the same. In effect, saying June is still the month that they think that they could cut interest rates by 25 basis points. And that's, yeah, that gave everyone a sigh of relief. The Bank of England, look, the Fed, the US is different. The US has had strong growth. We can talk about that in a minute, actually. The growth has been stronger than potential, I'd say, growth, which normally would lead to higher inflation. It's sort of interesting that inflation in the US is actually coming down despite that little blip in January, February, because growth has been really strong. Everywhere else in the developed markets, including the UK, but across lots of Europe, growth has been weak, sort of stagnating, maybe mild recessions. And so it's no surprise that inflation has been coming down. And I think the Bank of England, which backed up what the ECB, the European Central Bank, had said, they can be a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more confident that growth has been weak enough, that inflation is coming down, that will eventually allow them to cut interest rates. They're not cutting interest rates yet. They're all waiting for a little bit more data, but everyone is still saying that they'll be cutting interest rates eventually.
Yeah, and the markets seem to be reassured by those statements, right?
Yeah. Right now, we're in the perfect position where we've got growth, particularly in the US, and everywhere else is okay and it's stagnating, but it's not proper recession. And we can all look forward to easier monetary conditions, that the promise of the rate cut is coming. So that combination of decent earnings for equity investors and reasonable credit conditions for credit corporate bond investors, plus the promise of easier financial conditions in the future, it's been perfect. So yeah, markets have been very strong so far. I mean, we're coming up to the end of the Q1. So I don't want to jinx it. Could have something horrific happen the next couple of days. But you know, assuming we carry on, it's going to be 10% returns for like the S&P, Euro stocks, and credit spreads tighter in the first quarter of the year. So it's been pretty good.
It has been good. But of course, I mean, you talk about rate cuts there, and I suppose the one thing that was the outlier, well, as of course the Bank of Japan with its rate hike. Now that, I think, is the first time, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, first time since 2007, isn't it, that they've hiked rates? But, you know, with higher interest rates, you'd think comes a stronger currency. Not so in the case of the yen, Ben. What's going on?
Yeah, bear with me, because, you're right. It's sort of the opposite of what you'd have thought would happen. So They hiked interest rates, as you say. It was very unusual for Japan. They've had problems of too little inflation for decades. So they've been wanting inflation to go up. So they've had negative interest rates for a while, and they do quantitative easing. They buy bonds, and they sort of wanted to stop doing that because it is a bit distorting for the economy, monetary conditions. So they wanted to hike interest rates as soon as they got comfortable that inflation, the deflation, has been beaten. So they hiked interest rates. As you say, normally when you hike interest rates, bond yields go up because, yeah, of course, you know, that's there's a link. And then if bond yields are going up, then you attract more flows into your economy and more people want to buy your currency. So the currency should appreciate, the yen appreciated. Totally the opposite happened, though. Bond yields actually fell and the yen depreciated. It's pretty weak. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that a lot of people expected this move. And actually, that was the main reason in our asset allocation, the multi-asset team, we had the right trade on. Actually, we were underweight the yen and thinking that bond yields would go up because so many people had that position on. So it's a bit like the typical buy the rumor, sell the fact. Everyone knew it's going to happen.
Exactly.
Already
yeah.
pre-positioned.
Yeah, and yeah.
Turned down. The second thing, it was sort of coined by a colleague of mine in Chicago, who sent me an email. So it's typical that the Bank of Japan manages to hike interest rates, but it's taken dovishly. It's taken as if they've actually eased monetary policy. Because they hiked interest rates by 10 basis points, which frankly is neither here nor there, really. I mean, it's the fact that it went from negative to zero or maybe slightly positive, fine, but it wasn't a big move. But they said that they're going to continue to buy government bonds.
So they've hedged their bets, really, haven't they?
Yeah, they've sort of said they're going to hike interest rates, but if the market gets a bit unruly, if you know volatility spikes up, they've got the option to squash it by buying bonds. So I think you know investors were a little bit, those people who'd positioned for stronger yen and for higher yields were a little bit disappointed by that slight wrinkle in the plan, as it were.
Sure. And it's not just the yen, a similar sounding currency, of course, the yuan, if that's how you pronounce it, that we've seen some intervention there by the People's Bank of China.
Yeah.
In response to what?
China's always very interesting, but China's particularly interesting when it comes to the currency because, yeah, so you can look at your currency in a couple of ways. One way you look at it is versus the dollar. And for China, that is important because a lot of people in China think about what is the values of things in dollars. If the dollar was strengthening, then more people would try and get their money out of China. There's a lot of capital controls in China to try and stop that happening. But nonetheless, you can sort of, you can get around some of them, trade, et cetera, you can get money into dollars. And if the Chinese businesses and people thought that the dollar was going to appreciate more, then you'd see capital outflows, which China doesn't want. Uncontrolled capital outflows, so they're very focused on the dollar versus the renminbi, the yuan, as you say. But they also really care about the trade weighted value of their currency, and that's because ultimately that's what the exporters are going to be returning. Mm-hmm. If the trade weighted value is too strong, then that means that the exporters are struggling to sell their things because it compared to their competitors making cars in Europe, Chinese cars would be too expensive because the trade weighted currency is too strong. So that's a long way of saying that they've got two things in mind. Now, the problem, they were fixing the currency versus the dollar for a few months. It's sort of 7.2 to the dollar. But the dollar over this period of time has been strengthening this year. It's been going up in value. So that's meant that the yuan has been drawn higher as well. That's been strengthening. So the trade-weighted yuan has been getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And they don't want that. They want to try and make sure that their exports are competitive. So that they tweaked it, and it's very small. It's by about 0.4%. They tweaked it last week. But it got a few headlines because there had been this semi-peg. It weakened a little bit in one day and it got people talking. I think it's just this, actually, as I said, tweaking around the difference between the dollar and the trade weight. I don't think it's anything to write home about. But yeah, it is something to follow because there has been a couple of days now of slight weakness. So if they continue to weaken the currency, then, you know, we'll have to pay attention to that in case it leads to any sort of financial reverberations in China.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because the dollar doesn't seem to want to go down, even though everyone, you know, this point about being baked in, everyone is anticipating the next US interest rates are down. And yet the currency doesn't seem to really be telling you that, does it?
I think that stems from what I was talking about earlier, which is that the US economy has been strong.
Yes.
So if you just boil it down to that, the US economy has been strong. Lots of other economies, Europe, China, have been weaker. So on that basis, you would say going forward that the US interest rate should be relatively higher than other interest rates in the UK, Europe, in China. So that should attract more money into the US. And it has, even though everyone's talking about cutting interest rates, on a relative basis, you've seen more money going into the US. And that's been a strengthening of the dollar. And I think that does make sense. The big question, as I said, is if the US economy runs so hot in the next few weeks and couple of months that all of a sudden we stop talking about rate cuts this year, that June is such a crucial moment because it's sort of, we know that they want to cut in June. If they can't cut in June and we start talking about when can they cut, or maybe there could be a hike at some point in the next year or so. At that point, I think that would undermine equity and credit investors' confidence about monetary conditions. That could lead to a wobble. So sort of in our portfolios, what we're doing at the minute in the credit portfolios, we just had our strategy meetings just last week. We're tactically quite positive on credit markets. We think at least for the next few weeks leading up to June, there's huge demand for interest rate products, credit. It's been really strong all year. But we've got a longer term, more negative outlook because of that concern that the Federal Reserve might not be able to cut interest rates in June. We don't know that. That's not a forecast. But there is that volatility around June. So we're a little bit more cautious looking beyond June. But right now, things are looking quite rosy.
So it's quite interesting, isn't it, about because you've mentioned before, Ben, you know, we've had a very strong quarter for equities. But at the same time, we've had higher bond yields, not as high as they were year to date, probably. But a combination of high bond yields and strong equities. Is that normal?
It's not normal. In the last couple of years, it hasn't been normal. Normally, you've seen bond yields going up, starting to impact equity markets because people worry that, you know, financing costs are going up. But so far, it's been good for equities because bond yields have been going up because growth has been fine and a little bit of inflation, but it's been mostly about growth being fine. And as I keep saying, it's about looking towards June and hoping that that will still be the point where we can cut interest rates. Now, I mentioned the risk that if they can't cut interest rates because growth gets too strong, then, you know, that could undermine confidence. On the other hand, there's also a chance that if they do cut interest rates in June, it's been because growth has started to slow. We don't know the lags between, you know, higher interest rates, which have, you know, the last couple of years we've had interest rates pretty high. Central banks have hiked. Maybe we're going to start to see the economy suffer, even the US economy suffer because of this at some point. So it's almost as if equity and credit investors need to see that. Again, it's a bit of a tightrope, isn't it? We need to see not too hot, not too cold. Either side of that, if you get knocked off it, you could be in a little bit of trouble, which is, again, a reason why we're positive short term, but a little bit more cautious over the long term. Just on the yield, because I think it is worth pointing out. I said that credit has been really supported by yield investors. Now, credit is of course made up. Corporate bonds are made up of a yield, the underlying government bond yield plus a credit spread over the top of that. Now, government bond yields have been going up. Credit spreads are pretty tight, pretty low, but because government bond yields have been going up, the total yield you get for a corporate bond is pretty high in historical terms. And we've seen lots of yield-sensitive investors pile into the asset class. So these are pension schemes that, you know, want to lock in these nice high yields to pay their pensioners. Insurance companies doing something similar. And that's just been enormous. All the demand has been very, very strong all year. And as yields remain quite high, we don't think that that's going to stop, at least for the next few weeks, couple of months. That's another reason why we're tactically a little bit more optimistic in the credit funds.
Yeah, decent yields, as you say. Now, let's go to the rest of the week, what's left of it, because, of course, you are off on Good Friday, as is a lot of the Western world, me included. I would say for conspiracy theorists out there, having PCE inflation figures on Good Friday, is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's sometimes you get so focused on a data point, you know, trading it on the day and seeing what happens in the markets, you forget that, you know, these things have a medium term impact. So maybe it's not a bad thing to have it on a holiday. Maybe we should start announcing important data during weekends. I don't know. But yes, you're right. PCE inflation is very important because that's the one that the Federal Reserve looks at. But we know it's going to be a little bit higher than we were hoping for because other inflation data points have come in also a little bit higher recently. So that's almost, we know that. We're also getting some flash European inflation data the end of this week and the beginning of next week after Easter as well. So that's, we get Japanese inflation. So it's quite a lot of inflation data over the next few days, which is crucial. Next week also, we've got the flash PMI, sentiment indicators, very good indications of whether the service sector is still going strong, manufacturing, how's that doing? And then at the end of next week, we get US payrolls. Just one point on payrolls. My colleague Tim Drayson, our chief economist, wrote a really good blog actually recently on US immigration. So I've said that US growth has been very strong and also payroll growth has been strong. I mean, I keep repeating myself every month here though, that payroll seems to always beat. You know, the number of jobs created in the US is always surprisingly strong. One of the drivers of this is turning out to be just the wave of immigration that the US has been getting. Just huge. I mean, there's been in the headlines, hasn't it, from political reasons. Yeah, but from an economic point of view, loads of people coming in and going and working, getting a job. Yes, absolutely. That's allowed the US to create more jobs than they would have otherwise without leading to wage inflation. You know, more people coming in, more jobs created, more people spending money. That's one of the other reasons why the US economy has actually done pretty well over the next year or so. But we can talk about whether that will last when we dig into the US election later on this year, I think.
Yes, one for further down the line. But I read that blog. It is very good. So just note to listeners, if you do have time over the Easter period, read Tim's blog on the Elgin blog. Now, from blogs to numbers, what number have you got for us, Ben, and why?
Well, I think this one's a pretty obvious one. It's coming to April here in Hong Kong. So 7 is the number, which is the Hong Kong Sevens, which is going to happen the week after. The week after April, so that's always a fun time of year, trying to work out what fancy dress outfit. I think I put my bunch of grapes away that I had a couple of years ago. That was the best one so far. I think we're going to be frogs and princesses this time.
I'm trying to visualize all of this.
I know you don't want to, but also it's interesting that just for people who obviously don't live in Hong Kong, but it's going to be the last Hong Kong Sevens in the Hong Kong Stadium, the one up in Happy Valley, that's going to be retired after this year. And we're going to move to a new stadium, 50,000 capacity stadium they've been building for the last few years in the old airport in Kai Tak. So I row past there every week and it's been building and building and building. It does look pretty impressive. So exciting times for the Sevens next year.
Exciting times. And talking of your rowing, I hope you'll be watching the boat race too.
Oh yeah, it's on a bit late for me, but yeah, no, I'll be following that. It's always interesting.
The replay. All right. Well, look, lots to think about on the financial front. Lots of sport to think about too, from the sounds of things. And Ben, wishing you a happy holidays anyway, and happy holidays to all our listeners. And thank you for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only, and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.